It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 121 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
It's going to be a pretty big week for X-Wing. We've got two second edition expansions launching this week.
Yeah, we have the Saw's Renegade expansion containing a T-65 X-Wing and a U-Wing, as well as the TIE Reaper expansion. And all of these are coming with second edition versions of the ship, as well as some first edition cards to hold you over for a few months.
So in the immediate future, you can look forward to flying those new recosted T-65 X-Wings and U-Wings along with the TIE Reaper and still be able to check out all these interesting new cards for second edition, which is going to launch this coming September.
And this past week, we got a lot of the pilots and upgrade cards for second edition in the TIE Reaper expansion spoiled for us. So today we're going to go over the second edition content in the TIE Reaper expansion.
So the TIE Reaper is a pretty interesting expansion right from the get-go. It stands out first because it's one of the first official second edition releases we're going to see for the game, but it's a brand new ship to both the first and second edition of the game, and it brings with it a lot of new and some retooled mechanics.
At this point in the game's history, even with the relaunching of second edition, there are still so many ships existing for each faction that it's always curious to see how a new ship is going to fit into that faction. What unique role is this ship, the TIE Reaper, going to play?
From the surface, the TIE Reaper looks like it is really focused on being a support ship, but it also has pretty reasonable offensive potential, and it's fairly durable.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Just at first glance, we already have a ship that has the coordinate and jam actions and, you know, a comparable stat line, actually a little beefier. You know, the Lambda-class shuttle, you know, has a little bit more hit points than the TIE Reaper and has both those coordinate and jam actions, and has been for a long time the go-to support ship for the Empire. So when we're going through our examination here of the TIE Reaper, I think we want to put in the perspective of how is this comparing to the Lambda shuttle, and how is it distinguishing itself? Basically, why would I choose the Reaper over the Lambda?
And we can definitely put it in that camp of support ship, though the stat line is actually, I felt, a little bit misleading almost. If you just looked at it base stat line-wise, you've got 3 attack dice, a single agility die, and then 6 hull and 2 shields. So this looks almost like a reasonable jousting ship to have, comparable to a B-Wing or G1A. But when you look at the action bar, pilot abilities, and upgrade cards that are coming with this expansion, it's clearly got that focus on being a support ship, much like the Lambda class. Though it also does share a ship ability with another existing X-Wing ship.
Yeah, so like its lookalike, the TIE Striker, the TIE Reaper also has the Adaptive Ailerons ship ability, which reads, before you reveal your dial, if you are not stressed, you must execute a white, one bank, or one straight maneuver.
This is the identical ability we see over on the TIE Striker, and this is actually carrying over from the first edition of the game where we saw the exact same ability featured on the TIE Striker. This ability gives the ship a lot of extra mobility, which is a big advantage it has over the Lambda-class shuttle. The Lambda-class is still a large-based ship in second edition of the game and has a pretty bad maneuver dial. It's got a lot of other great features going for it, but we can all agree that the maneuver dial on the Lambda-class is pretty rough. This ship, just by having the adaptive ailerons, gives it a lot of movement options, and its dial is actually a pretty strong dial, given that it has access to those adaptive ailerons.
Yeah, when examining the Reaper's dial, you want to compare it almost to a ship with slam. Both ailerons and the slam action really enhance the printed maneuvers on a dial and give the ship a mobility that definitely is greater than what it appears when you just first look at that dial. Because at first glance on that TIE Reaper dial, there is a lot of red.
The TIE Reaper has access to green 1, 2, and 3 straights, as well as green 1 banks. It's also got white 2 and 3 banks, but both of its hard turns, the 1 hard turn and the 2 hard turn, are red.
Yeah, and while it doesn't have any 4 or 5 speed maneuvers, it does have some exciting maneuvers. It's got some red 1 speed S-loops, which is pretty exciting. We haven't really seen much of that before. And it also has a zero-speed stop that's red.
Yeah, and I have to say the fact that this ship has any maneuvers to turn around at all is also another advantage it has over the Lambda-class shuttle. And this, combined with the adaptive ailerons, gives it a lot of potential ending positions for that flip-around maneuver.
Absolutely. I mean, the Lambda would take, you know, around three maneuvers to turn 180 degrees. And the TIE Reaper can do that in just one turn. So just having the flip around maneuver in the S loop is really exciting. It also just has a lot more diversity. Even those turns are pretty great when you think about the ailerons and how those impact it.
And we've known since very early on in the first edition of X-Wing that a ship that doesn't have any non-red hard turns is going to have a really hard time actually turning around on the board. We know this from the Lambda class for a long time. But even though the TIE Reaper doesn't have any non-red hard turns, the fact that it has those adaptive ailerons gives it effectively the potential to take a non-stress dealing turn equivalent by doing a one bank into another bank move, where you're going to get the same angle change where you rotate 90 degrees by the time you're done moving, but you're not going to have to take a stress token necessarily.
Right. And so that's great. Just having the option to turn 90 degrees without getting stressed does put you a mark above the Lambda. And now you even still have the option to turn another 45 degrees and take a stress, doing a one bank and either a one speed or two speed red turn.
This dial also has that red stop maneuver, which kind of creates some interesting mind game potential here, where if you're not stressed, you're going to be forced to perform that one straight or one bank with those adaptive ailerons, but then you can follow that up with a stop maneuver. So the potential ending positions, even if you're just going one forward on your aileron, can range anywhere from a zero stop, stay in place, to a pretty large three bank. I mean, overall, the combination of adaptive ailerons and an otherwise limited dial gives this ship, the TIE Reaper, quite a bit of mobility, which is refreshing to see in a support ship. Oftentimes, they have a lot more limited maneuver dials.
I mean, they had to boost the speed in one of the Imperial support ships. I mean, the Hawk got a boost, so the game has really changed.
And while we're still comparing the Reaper with the Lambda, we actually see some overlap in their actions, but some very distinct differences. Obviously, they both have access to the focus action, but beyond that, there's some pretty distinct changes.
Yeah, so the Reaper has focus, evade, jam, and then a red coordinate action, which is a pretty good spread of actions. You got your generic focus, evade for defense, and then you have a control ability in jam that's white, which means you can freely use that every turn. Or when you need to get a coordinate, you can use a red coordinate action and receive a stress token. Comparatively, the Lambda-class shuttle has focus, reinforce, which is a little bit better than an evade, a white coordinate action, and then a red jam. So the Lambda can more easily coordinate every turn, whereas the Reaper is going to more effectively jam your opponent's ships.
And we'll see in a little bit here when we talk about some of the TIE Reaper pilots that they actually really depend on that jam action to synergize with some of their pilot abilities. But looking at these actions overall, I think you can pretty safely say the Lambda class is more the ship expecting to be shot at several times, looking at its defensive action option there with the reinforce, where it's going to get shot more times, so it'll reduce damage overall. Whereas the TIE Reaper's got the probably slightly less effective evade token, but it's got that extra mobility there, so there's a chance you can get shot at less in a given round.
Right, so Lambda's going to be very defensive and a much better coordinate ship. So I think it's going to fit the role of support ship better than the Reaper. But we do have that nimble Reaper that has a very good jam action. We've seen a lot of jams in this second edition be red. And so having a white jam is pretty good. So this is, I think, going to be much more of a control ship for the Empire, which definitely has me excited.
And right now, we don't know 100% for sure how jam is going to work in second edition, but based on the information we do have, we know that when a ship gets jammed, it either has to discard a green token or break a target lock, or if it has a jam token, that in a way prevents it from taking other actions of those types.
Right, and I'm really happy that we know the jam is going to disrupt target locks. It's seeming like with proton torpedoes that munitions are going to be a pretty powerful force in second edition. And so having tools to disrupt munitions, I think, seems great. Using those jam actions so that your other ships aren't target locked by proton torpedoes seems like a great use of a support or control ship.
The only fear at that point is a proton torpedo coming from Luke Skywalker with instinctive aim, but that's a whole nother category we can talk about later.
Yeah, we can't account for force cheating.
So let's talk about some of the pilots coming on the TIE Reaper. We've got three named pilots that have been spoiled here. Coming in at initiative 2, we have, in quotes, Vizier, who has the pilot ability, after you fully execute a speed 1 maneuver using your adaptive ailerons ship ability, you may perform a coordinate action. If you do, skip your perform action step.
Yeah, and so we just talked about how the Lambda looks like a much better support ship because it has that white coordinate action. Well, Vizier in many ways also has a white coordinate action. Now, if you ever do get stressed from some other means, like maybe one of your red maneuvers, then you won't have access to that red coordinate action the following turn because the stress is going to turn off your Aileron's maneuver, meaning Vizier's ability won't trigger.
And this is also interesting because while this is a pretty powerful ability, your opponent also has some ways to disrupt that synergy. Since this specifies that you have to fully execute the maneuver, they can potentially block you and prevent you from getting that free coordinate.
Right. I mean, you do have some play around that in that you do get to select which Aileron maneuver you execute when you activate Vizier. So it is going to be difficult to block, but you know, perhaps a large base ship gets in your way. Then you're going to have a difficult time executing your Ailerons.
But even if you do get blocked at that point, you won't get that free coordinate action, but you're still going to perform your normal maneuver, at which point you could then take an action.
Right, and this also grants some versatility that a normal white coordinate action wouldn't. So you could do this on a turn where you're going to execute one of your many red maneuvers, perform your Aileron maneuver, do a coordinate to one of your great Imperial ace ships, and then execute a one-speed sloop. That seems like a really powerful sequence of events.
Amongst the pilots for the TIE Reaper that we know about, it does seem like Vizier's more on a support focus with that pilot ability. But as we move down the line, we see kind of an interesting cycle of two cards here. The other pilots for the TIE Reaper, Captain Faroff and Major Vermeil.
Yeah, so they both have similar conditions for triggering their pilot ability. Captain Faroff is Initiative 3 and reads, while you defend, if the attacker does not have any green tokens, you may change one of your focus or blank results to an evade result. So this is a great defensive modification ability. Defensive mods are the best. And anytime anything's granting a defensive modification, you should pay attention.
Well, especially a defensive modification that's as reliable as this. This says either a focus or blank result. So no matter what you roll on your one defense die, you're going to be able to convert that into an evade result so long as the attacker doesn't have any green tokens.
Right, and you have that jam action, which means when you jam a ship, if they're going to be targeting you, that is also the same as taking an evade token, except you also get the bonus of the jam removing their tokens.
And I like this design because it's a really interesting way to add value to an existing action, whereas beyond the normal effect of the jam token, you're getting that added defensive effect, which I think is a really interesting design space to encourage that more aggressive controlling play. And we know that in second edition, ships taking multiple actions in a round is going to be a lot less common without the help of things like coordinate. So if the opposing list doesn't have any ways of getting multiple actions, that jam token is going to be really devastating.
Absolutely. And even if you spend your turn not jamming the opponent and say take a coordinate action, and your opponent does have a focus on their attack, now they've decided they want to spend that focus to modify their attack dice, granting you a free evade token, basically, or choose to not modify their dice and see what you end up rolling naturally with your green die.
Yeah, it puts them in a weird situation where if you're getting shot at and they roll two hits and a focus and they've got a focus token, if they spend the focus token to add the hit, well, you'll automatically get an evade. And if they don't spend the focus token, you might get an evade anyway.
Right, and this ability is also going to pair well with ships that have high initiative. If you have a high initiative ace and they attack the ship targeting your Reaper, your opponent might choose to spend their green tokens to defend that attack, and then they won't have any benefit when attacking Captain Faroff.
So it looks like Captain Faroff is probably your best choice if you're going to put some kind of expensive support crew on your TIE Reaper. Something like, we're expecting the ship to have two crew slots since it comes with an upgrade card that uses two crew slots. So this might be a good choice if you're going to bring that Emperor Palpatine crew. You're going to have a lot better time defending that investment of Palpatine if you put it on the ship with a really strong defensive ability.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you're investing in expensive support crew, Captain Faroff is going to be your Reaper of choice.
Major Vermeil, on the other hand, has a lot more of an offensive focus. You've got that same criteria for triggering his pilot ability, but it's focused on improving your offense, which makes sense because Major Vermeil comes with a slightly higher initiative of 4. And a pilot ability that reads, while you perform an attack, if the defender does not have any green tokens, you may change one of your focus or blank results to a hit result.
Yeah, and that's a really powerful mod. I mean, just converting result, not re-rolling or just converting focus result, but converting either a focus or a blank result to a hit is very powerful. We saw how great Guidance Chips was in first edition, and this is a comparable amount of modification. Yes, there's a trigger you need to get rid of those green tokens, but you know, it comes natural with that jam action. Or, you know, once again, it also pairs great with ships with high initiative.
Yeah, having those higher initiative ships in your squad means that they're more likely to attack sooner and get rid of those green tokens on the defender so that you're going to be able to more reliably trigger Major Vermeil's ability. And it's actually nice to see the offensive modification on the TIE Reaper since it doesn't come with a native target lock action. It's only got options for focuses to modify its offense, where most of the time you're probably going to be jamming or coordinating. So being able to get some offensive modification in addition to whatever support or control effect you're using is really valuable.
Right. This feels a lot like the Pure Sabacc for the TIE Reaper. Just a very strong offensive pilot ability. And I think it really works great with that jam action. It's just such strong incentive for just always taking that jam action.
Yeah, the more I look at these cards, I'm actually really excited for the TIE Reaper. I didn't realize how much I wanted Imperials to have more support and control options, and it's nice to see that come in the form of this nice little ship there. And I actually really like the adaptive ailerons mechanic. I always liked that on the TIE Striker in first edition. I just felt like that ship was never quite good enough, so I never got to do those cool one bank to the right ailerons, two left bank to get that cool kind of, you know, zigzag maneuvering. So I'm really excited to see that mechanic come back here on the TIE Reaper.
Yeah, and on a much sturdier platform that can still deal out a decent amount of damage.
All right, before we close out, we do have a couple of the upgrade cards that were spoiled in this article. A lot of these upgrade cards share names with first edition upgrade cards coming in the same pack, but they actually have pretty different abilities.
Yeah, off the bat, we see Death Troopers still costing 2 crew slots, but with a completely new ability. During the activation phase, enemy ships at range 0-1 cannot remove stress tokens. Whoa.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful. The first edition version of Death Troopers is more a parallel to the Rebel Captive card from first edition. This is a stress-focused mechanic here in second edition, but it's actually really powerful, and it's not something we've seen before in X-Wing.
Yeah, I mean, so this is a very powerful effect, but also kind of interesting coming in the TIE Reaper, which doesn't inherently have any way to stress the opponent, but these Death Troopers can just capitalize once a ship does become stressed.
And given the mobility options that the TIE Reaper has with that adaptive ailerons and those 3 straight or 3 bank maneuvers, even though it's got a pretty narrow range restriction of range 0-1, it's not going to be too hard to get your TIE Reaper into a position where this ability can trigger, and it's going to make your opponent second guess even just taking, you know, S-loops or K-turns.
Right. I would think this would pretty substantially narrow your opponent's maneuver options. That's very punishing if you're in the right place to set this up.
Well, I mean, if you drop it on a pilot like Vizier at initiative 2, he's probably going to be moving pretty early on in the initiative cycle. So if you know your opponent's already stressed, just put him in a position where none of their green maneuvers are going to get them outside of range 1.
Yeah, and if you also just brought some other stress-dealing sources from your other ships in your list, then the Death Troopers can really deliver a 1-2 punch and really lock your opponent out of the game that way.
Another upgrade card coming in this expansion follows along that same control focus. The ISB Slicer is an Imperial-only single crew slot card that reads, during the end phase, enemy ships at range 1-2 cannot remove jam tokens.
Now, this is interesting because I think it's perhaps a bit more just obviously useful on the TIE Reaper because it does have that jam action. Jam tokens usually are gone before you get to the end phase. You've usually consumed your opponent's action and are not sitting around. But they are orange tokens, so they do naturally go away at the end phase. Unless, of course, you have these ISB slicers.
And range 1-2 is actually a pretty wide zone to cover. So if you're able to get a jam token to stick on your enemy ship, either because they weren't able to take an action or you have multiple ships dealing out jam tokens, having those carry over into the next round gives you an opportunity to either pile on more jam tokens and try and keep them in range of the ship with this upgrade, or switch to all offense there, knowing that they're not going to be able to get those defensive tokens that they need.
Yeah, how I really see ISB slicers being utilized is to punish your opponent for taking repositioning actions. If your opponent takes a boost or barrel roll action, they're not going to have any green tokens or red target locks for my jam token to remove, which means that jam token is going to sit around. And so now ISB Slicer is going to take their action the following turn, or just lock them out from ever taking modification actions, and they can only reposition. So if your meta is all Soontirfels and A-Wings, perhaps consider some ISB Slicers.
I am excited to see some strong control options in the Imperial Faction for 2nd Edition. We've also got the Tactical Officer upgrade card. I think we've seen this one before, but this is a card that can be played in any faction. It requires the ship being equipped have a red coordinate action on its action bar, and all it says is treat the difficulty of your coordinate as white.
Right, and I like the language here. You need the red coordinate action to equip this, but it just says reconfigures the red coordinate action. So you're going to change that red coordinate action on your action bar and replace it with the white coordinate action.
And it's nice that they're kind of reeling in the effect of these cards that kind of add actions. In 1st edition, it was a little problematic for cards like Engine Upgrade, which could just grant an action to any ship. It's nice here to see a more narrow focus where, yes, any faction can use Tactical Officer, but the ships that use it already have to have an existing coordinate action, so they're not going to get any new crazy powerful ability like coordinate.
Now, another support crew we have is Director Krennic, who grants a white target lock action and reads, setup, before placing forces, assign the optimized prototype condition to another friendly ship. Yay, we still have conditions. Optimized prototype condition card reads, while you perform a forward arc primary attack against a ship locked by a friendly ship with the Director Krennic upgrade, you may spend one hit, crit, or focus result. If you do, choose one. The defender loses one shield, or the defender flips one of its face-down damage cards.
So it's nice to see that we haven't lost too much of the complexity from condition cards in the 1st edition of the game. Couple interesting points on this card. We see that setup keyword again appearing on Krennic. We saw that before on the Captain Beckett crew card for Scum and Villainy coming in the Lando's Falcon expansion. This ability is a little bit different than it is in 1st edition. Got some overlap here. 1st edition granted the assigned ship a shield too. That effect is gone. We also see the Director Krennic card giving the equipped ship the target lock action, which is a pretty good option to have on the TIE Reaper. It doesn't have that target lock action natively, and with 3 attack dice, it could really benefit from potential additional offensive modification.
Yeah, and this is great because, I mean, they've really, you know, increased the size of upgrade cards moving from 1st edition to 2nd edition. So now they're going to be the same size as your pilot cards, which means, you know, you would think you would get all of this text onto one card, but I really like the decision they made here to really split it up onto 2 cards so we have more things to track. I really like referencing one card. Go read this other card. It's just really simple and easy for new players to pick up and grasp.
Your sarcasm is Thanks. Very subtle, Carson. We appreciate it. I'm honestly, I mean, we can talk about this for a second. I'm not terribly excited to have condition cards in X-Wing. I wasn't a big fan of them in really any iteration of 1st edition. Really, I just don't want the complexity to get too out of hand.
They're sloppy design for new players. Your text exceeds the text box you establish for your cards, you should go back to the drawing board and think of, you know, a new ability that fits into that text box. You know, overall, upgrade cards in 2nd edition look great. We have really simple designs like Tactical Officer, just changing the difficulty of your coordinate action. But then we still have the overly complex cards like Director Krennic.
But if we can get beyond our dislike for condition cards, looking at the optimized prototype condition, I think I just noticed this. It's a little bit interesting. I think in the 1st edition, you could spend a blank result in order to remove a shield. That is gone now. It has to be a otherwise usable result here, either a hit, a crit, or a focus. So that, I think, is limiting its effectiveness here. It is nice to have the option to spend that focus result to remove a shield from the target so you can effectively get some damage through if you don't have any offensive modification. And it's interesting to see the other option there where you can spend that result to flip a face-down damage card face-up. It looks like that your opponent's going to get to choose that or it's done randomly. I'm not sure what the rules going along with that are. Hopefully that'll be in the rules documentation with the game.
I'm guessing it's got to be random.
Either way, though, we're starting to see more mechanics like that. I know one of the X-Wing pilots is going to be able to spend results to flip damage cards too. So I'm wondering if that's going to be a more common mechanic we see in X-Wing 2nd Edition, taking those existing damage cards and starting to flip them face up and deal their effects again.
Yeah, I mean, one thing through this 2nd Edition design has been clear is that they want to make critical damage much more relevant in the game of X-Wing. You know, optimized prototype is definitely holding true to that design philosophy. You know, you're going to get shields out of the way so that you can start dealing critical damage. And if you have some damage cards on the defender, then you can start turning them into critical damage.
So it looks like Director Krennic and that condition are going to be reasonably powerful. Hopefully they'll restrain the number of condition cards they introduce into the game. Here's to hoping for that.
Yeah, I mean, overall, it is an interesting mechanic that could have fit into one card.
But overall, these upgrade cards coming in the TIE Reaper expansion look pretty interesting, and I'm excited to see these control effects here. I guess we'll get to have it all in hand here this week.
Yeah, start dealing out some jam tokens.
Couple things we'd like to announce here before we close the show out today. Carson has a very special announcement that we just decided between the two of us here.
Oh, no, we didn't just decide it. The committee has decided and approved that Radio TCX is going to be the official podcast for the Minox Squadron Open, which should be a fun event in November, hosted somewhere in California. Mainly, it's going to be a painting competition and a competition for customized models. So if you're someone who's put in the extra effort to make your ships look unique on the table, be sure to check out Radio TCX's Minox Open.
You heard it here second. It's happening sometime in November. On a slightly less serious note, in the next couple weeks here, Carson is going to be absent because he's got a bunch of moving stuff to do.
Yeah, I'm going to be moving from Minnesota, leaving the frozen north behind and going to the mountains of Gunnison, Colorado, which if you are in the western slope of Colorado and want to get some X-Wing games in, be sure to hit me up. But just from the time it takes to move, I will not be able to record for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, so in the interim, rather than just me talking at you by myself, I'll probably pull on some good X-Wing guests from Minnesota here to talk some X-Wing, maybe look more in detail at some 2nd edition mechanics.
And before I go, I just want to say thank you to all of the wonderful Minnesota X-Wing players who have made me feel welcome here. I was just a casual kitchen table X-Wing player until I stumbled upon all of you having a great time at a tournament. And I haven't looked back since. It's been a great ride.
Yeah, Carson, it's a shame to see you go. You've been a really important part of this community. So I think we're all pretty sad in Minnesota that you're going to have to head over to Colorado. But I guess the Colorado X-Wing community can benefit from all your knowledge. For anyone worried, Carson still plans on coming back to the podcast in a couple weeks here, unless he's playing some kind of elaborate trick on me. But we'll just have these next 2 weeks here where we'll get some guests on. And after that, Carson will be back to the regularly scheduled Radio TCX.
No, I gotta toughen up the Colorado meta and then report back.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/radiotcx and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the podcast, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, along with a comment saying what you like about the show and why others would be interested in listening.
And if you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means so much to us.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Carson will talk to you in a few weeks. In the meantime, enjoy playing with your Saw's Renegades and TIE Reaper expansion.
And jam your opponent's ships.